It is later than you think.
Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From a bunker certified 99% evil-free somewhere in the heartland, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and I'm 99.99% evil-free. One day I'll be 100% evil free, and that's an eternity.
We're looking forward to that day.
You know what? Right, this is, speaking of, honestly, this is August 6th, 2009, and we just a little while ago, we laugh a lot, but there was a very serious documentary on this evening that we watched when you got home called White Light, Black Rain. Mm-hmm. And it was all about Nagasaki, Hiroshima, and I think that's something that just for a couple of minutes we need to talk about and remember today, because this is the day that it happened back in 1945, August the 6th.
Yeah. The survivors of Hiroshima went through, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say they went through hell on earth.
Mm-hmm. If you have access to HBO, it is currently playing on HBO. It could be an older documentary. I didn't see the date. So maybe something you can get at Netflix. And if you want to talk for a second here, I'll check and see if it's available.
I remember seeing this earlier, but what's really chilling is just the stories and the old video, the old film that is incorporated into this documentary showing children who, you know, 3, 5, 7 years old, who are suddenly orphaned and living on the streets of this ruined city. There's a story from a woman who remembers how her family had gathered at Nagasaki at her insistence. She was a young girl, maybe 10 or 11 at the time, but she insisted that her family gather together, mother, father, you know, sisters, brothers, at Nagasaki, presumably, I guess, as the war had turned against Japan and they knew it. Mm-hmm. But they all gathered in Nagasaki just in time for the Americans to drop.
And they all died except
a nuclear
for her.
Bomb. And she was the only one who was left. And she admitted frankly that she had contemplated suicide many times. There was another woman interviewed whose sister had survived the bombing at Hiroshima with her and jumped in front of a train because she just couldn't bear living any longer. And I imagine that there was a lot of that in the aftermath of what had happened there. It was just the entire world changed in an instant. And when you see the film of the immediate aftermath of what happened there, you can only, it's impossible to imagine it didn't look all that different from the images we saw from the Gulf Coast after Hurricane Katrina, except that in the aftermath of Katrina, what you had to worry about were maybe industrial chemicals that had gotten washed into people's homes and so forth.
Or Wackenhut.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the private security hired by the governor of Louisiana to go patrol the streets in New Orleans. But in Hiroshima, the people there had to deal with not only the residual radiation in the air and I mean in the buildings and the ground, the earth around them, but crops that were being grown in the surrounding farmland, which were still irradiated. So
they had so many things to contend with. There was there were many orphans. There was the initial damage to loss of life in the family, to loss of limbs, loss of vision, loss of many other things because of the initial trauma to your body. And in addition to that, you had, as you say, what are you going to do? What are you going to eat? Because there's nothing around and what little there is to eat is, is irradiated, which at the time they didn't know that was going to hurt them. But the third one was that radiation disease wasn't really known at the time. And so the people, even the doctors that were taking care of these kids and adults, they thought they had a disease, and so they were being ostracized.
Right. So not only did they have to deal with the physical problems from the aftermath of the bombing, they had to deal with being outcasts.
I did find it on Netflix. White Light, Black Rain. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's it is well worth watching. And the reason I say that, not just because today's an anniversary of Hiroshima, but You know, because we tend to toss around, we Americans, we tend to toss around, hey, just let's go nuke them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have no idea what that means.
And there was an American gentleman, and I don't know what his connection was to the bombs, because I didn't come in and see, I didn't see the beginning of the show, so I didn't see what his name or his connection to, if he was a surviving member of the air crew or whatever, but he made that point, you know, that the people get riled up about Saddam Hussein and say, oh, let's just go, you know, turn Iraq into a sheet of glass. And he said, look, they don't know what a nuke is. If they did, they wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
So, and this gentleman looked like he was probably in his 70s or 80s. So, you know, likely lived through that era and had some experience with what happened there. So anyway, 54 years ago today, the atomic bomb first dropped at Hiroshima, Japan. Interestingly, on the 33rd parallel by a 33rd degree Freemason, President Harry Truman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of numbers in there that we can go into.
Coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, hey, speaking of numbers, this has nothing to do with any of that. But one of the things that I've been contemplating is taking more classes online, either Bible classes or continuing my graduate program that I had started when you and I met online. So I was taking a look and doing an online application today. I won't tell you what school, but I was applying in Indiana. And I had to put in a code for my high school because even though I've gone to Indiana, my degree's from there, you still have to put it all in because they don't know. Mm-hmm. It's an online app. I looked it up, and it took me a while to find it, but I looked it up, and it was 003913.
That explains so much.
I know. Well, what do you do?
I'll have to look mine up now. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's
I'll
probably
do that. We'll report that tomorrow.
13 or something.
Something like that. Well, where should we go from here? Should we go into politics? Should we go into emerging diseases?
There's a lot that's been taking place. Well, let's do the emerging diseases. There's something happening in China that just reminds me so much. And I wrote a piece about it today because it just seems lately that not a day goes by that I'm not reminded by some headline, reminded of the book that I wrote a few years ago called The Armageddon Strain. In The Armageddon Strain, I have a fictional group of shadow scientists that some of them are working willingly, many of them are not. That really, that idea kind of started with all of the missing microbiologists stories that we were seeing. These scientists were working on a chimera of the H5N1 virus and Ebola. And while that sounds kind of funny, virus and a bacterium, it is technically possible. And we'll go into the long explanation of how that can happen here. I had my scientists were working in the American Southwest, and they were doing the mixing, the live in vivo in the population mixing and testing over in China. Hmm. And I keep reading things that are happening in China. And a few years ago, we had a story about so-called blue tongue and the pigs. Mm-hmm. We've had many stories about so-called swine strep? Anyway, a lot of things that are going on in the pig population. And you always pay attention when you see China stories about pigs. This is leading up to somewhere, believe me, because pigs can transmit diseases to humans. So can dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what takes us to today's article. I did know that for the past few days I've been sort of following a story out of China about an outbreak of pneumonic plague. Most people know about bubonic plague.
Right.
But pneumonic plague is just another variation on the same bacterial infection, but it's a different entry point. It comes in through your lungs, and because it's infecting in your lungs, you can cough it out.
Ah, okay, airborne.
Exactly. The other one is in your blood. Because it can be coughed out, it's human-to-human transmission. Technically speaking, bubonic plague is, unless you're going to go bite somebody, you're not likely to pass it along. And even then, I don't know that you could. But generally, you get that from fleas. So it's not human to human. Right now, pneumonic plague has broken out in China. It's infected many, many people. It is treatable, but they're quarantining large sections of the province that is concerned here. Thailand, Vietnam, essentially closing their borders to Chinese travelers, trying to keep everything in China because they don't want it. The story that came out today is that apparently patient zero got it from his dog. His dog had been bitten by a flea.
Mm-hmm.
The flea had, his dog had consumed a wild marmot who had been infected by a flea. So maybe the marmot is patient zero.
So like bubonic plague, the bacterium that causes pneumonic plague is a...
Yersinia pestis.
Okay, which lives its life cycle in fleas mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly. It's the same bug. It's just the vector, the transmission is a little bit different.
Okay.
So this dog ate, it almost sounds like a song,
mm-hmm.
but the dog ate the marmot, and the marmot had died of bubonic plague.
Okay.
The dog ate the marmot. The dog apparently infected the farmer as the farmer was burying his dead dog who had died from eating the marmot.
Okay.
The farmer then contracted pneumonic plague, not bubonic, and he transmitted it to his family, and it's gone from there.
And so far, 10,000 people have been quarantined by the government of China.
They are stopping bus lines. They're really trying to get a lid on it. But this is the kind of thing that it won't take much to get out. And, of course, as I mentioned in my article, there's always that danger that in the wild, in some way, you're going to have a co-infection going on in the same person. Yeah, that person mm-hmm. also happens to have the flu.
And what you got is an unpredictable mixing vessel.
Well, you do, because they're all within the same, especially flu, because that's also in the lungs. So you've got the same cells that have the same, you know, like Sam and Lucy, his friend, the mm-hmm. red dachshund, who happen to be in the same room together.
Mm-hmm.
And if they weren't both fixed, they might just have a little dance. And the next thing we know, we've got red dachshunds and and we might even have some dapple dachshunds. Who knows what's in their bloodline?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of thing that can take place within a cell. And also, as within my book, it's possible that science at some point decides to There are studies in the past that try to find ways to use bacterial vectors and bacteriophages as a means to improve the human condition, to vaccinate you against things. In fact, a vaccination against Yersinia pestis has been studied in the past using it within a plasmid that uses a bacteriophage as the, in other words, that's the truck that mm-hmm. drives it into your cells. So they have actually combined viral and bacterial genes.
No, a plasmid is what?
A plasmid is a circle. It's an extra nuclear bit of genomic material. And there are some studies, without going into a lot of explanation, because honestly, I couldn't give you an extremely detailed explanation because I don't have my PhD in this. I'd be too scary if I had that. I just studied enough of it to be able to tell you. And I graduated top mm-hmm. of my class. So I'd got good grades at the time, but it's been a while. But I do know that there have been some research that shows that, for instance, Yersinia pestis bacteria that have plasmids within the cells are much more infective than those that don't.
Huh.
So a plasmid okay. is a very infectious particle of genetic material. And if you think of it as a little ring of pop beads, you can pop other pop beads in there and mm-hmm. mix them up.
Okay. All right. Huh. This is a, this reads like something right out of the Armageddon story.
It does, yeah. And when I was reading about this over there, I couldn't, again, I... It,
or The Stand.
Yeah, it does.
Well, not quite
or
as bad,
so many others that have come along.
Sure, sure.
And oftentimes it's been, the ones that we've seen lately have been due to, as with the Armageddon strain, mm-hmm. the desire for a vaccine.
Well, as we've got that going on, we've got...
So don't be surprised if after all this, you start reading articles about we need to vaccinate people against the plague.
Hmm. Yesterday we talked about something that we should expand on just a little bit because we promised that we would, and that is the Promise software.
We promised that, didn't we?
Yes, we did. In talking yesterday about...
there are no trans fats in that Promise software.
No, which
either,
is one of the benefits of it, which is probably why it's so popular by, you know, in use by so many governments and extra government agencies around the world today. Now, yesterday we were talking about how did we get to Promise software?
DynCorp.
That's right. DynCorp, which may have had a role in liberating Promise software from the company that developed it.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah. So we call it research and development. That's funny. Most places would call it theft. It was developed by a company called Inslot, and as I understand it, Promise, which is spelled P-R-O-M-I-S, was case management software intended for law enforcement use. But something about the way it was developed, makes it good architecture software. In other words, the software that manages entire networks for a variety of applications. Inslot was going to license it to the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
This was during the Reagan administration. It's capable of tracking lots of bits of data and people at the same time, and it allowed prosecutors within the Department of Justice to keep tabs on all the legal cases going on throughout the United States.
Was it handed off surreptitiously? Wasn't Michael Reconosciuto?
Michael Reconosciuto, I believe, was the gentleman who modified Promise to use to track money laundering activities through drug transactions, which were being flown into the United States through the airport at Mena, Arkansas.
And wasn't the Promise software, again, surreptitiously inserted into certain computer systems of financial institutions?
Yes, and we'll yeah, skipping ahead, I'll put a link to the timeline of what happened here because there is a lot here. And this Promise software somehow seems to be at the heart of a lot of what is going on this global darkness, which is why Danny Kessler, the investigative reporter who was murdered, by the way, almost 18 years ago to the day. It was August 10th of 1991. He was found dead in his hotel room. That's why he called it the octopus, because Promise kept showing up sort of in the middle of all of this, these tentacles that were out all over the place. But yes, as we later learned, Promise software was being used not only by the Department of Justice, but also by a variety of agencies within the United States government. The National Security Agency, for one, took the software, made some modifications to install secret back doors that allowed the NSA access to the software. And then the software was repackaged and offered out to foreign governments and bank institutions so that the NSA could keep tabs on what was happening, you know, in these institutions. In other words, trying to track the movement of money around the globe. So here you've got this software that starts out as case management software for prosecutors. Suddenly it's being used to track money laundering activities around the globe, apparently on both sides of the law. Those who are trying to catch the evildoers and the evildoers who are doing evil.
But the small company that actually created it
was forced into bankruptcy.
Exactly.
Right. They did finally win. They filed a $30 million lawsuit against the Department of Justice. They won $6.1 million in damages. So they got a little money out of it, but not nearly what they would have gotten if the DOJ had just paid the licensing fees. So, as it happened, the damage award was later overturned on a technicality by the government of the United States.
How convenient.
Yeah.
How convenient. Was it Michael Rupert who wrote a number of articles about
Promise and what happened there? Yes. We also read a number of things by the late J. Orland Grabby.
We did. Now, reading things on his website, if it's still there, are tricky.
And I don't know. But he's passed away, but he had a habit for some reason of posting a lot of very insightful and cutting edge articles on what was happening kind of beneath the covers of the global political spectrum with pictures of naked women. So, you know, wound up just having to cross that off the list of sites that we visited. But he has passed away within the last year, and I don't know whether his site is still being maintained. So anyway, that is Promise Software. And by the way, Danny Casolaro was not the only investigative reporter digging into this story who lost his life over it. Another gentleman named Paul Wilcher was killed in June of 1993. And he said his information had gone far beyond what Casolaro had uncovered. So don't know what that was. This is a story that we researched when we first really started digging into the seamy underbelly of, well, the involvement of the United States government and other governments in the illicit drug trade. So it's been a little while and some of the details are fuzzy, but Promise Software for some reason seems to be at the heart of a lot of this. And those who dig too hard at what went on wind up dead, like Casolaro, like Paul Wilcher, and like Gary Webb, the reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, who was the first to report that the CIA was behind the trade of crack cocaine in Southern California. Dead of suicide, officially, but it's unusual to find suicide where you put two bullets into your own head. So that is the deal with Promise Software and
yes, the deal with Promise. And how's the what's the link to DynCorp again?
DynCorp,
they were somehow involved in liberating the software, you said?
I'm going to have to do more reading on that. I just you know, scratched together very quickly a few things that I remembered about Promise
Software. You can't squeeze more of that research into your day. Come on. You're only working 9 hours over there.
Well, let's see. What does the...
Oh, you can look it up for tomorrow.
Oh, okay. According to the former owner of a CEO of Inslaw, the company that developed Promise, DynCorp was one of the contractors that took over management of the software after the Department of Justice took it from...
Okay, well, yeah. That makes sense because right. DynCorp, one of the things they do is data mining.
Exactly. So they sort of took over management of the software after Inslaw was kind of kicked to the curb.
And they were named in the lawsuit, weren't they?
Don't know that for a fact, but they may well have been.
I know their name came up somewhere, but... left turn on to other things. You know what? There's an article at WorldNet Daily today talking about how a Turkish imam, Muslim leader, mm-hmm. has been advocating possibly using the Dome of the Rock as a place of worship for all Abrahamic faiths.
Well, that's interesting.
And if you go to the Sanhedrin.org, you'll find there's an English version and a Hebrew version. Understandably, I'm looking at the English version right now. There is an article about the Sanhedrin initiative and this big meeting that was held earlier this year with this gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Along with many others from the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin is the law body from the Old Testament.
Right. It's been
71 leaders.
Yeah.
That has, for the last 3 or 4 years, they've been back and going at it.
71.
Yes.
71. Jesus, the one, sent out 70.
Yes. 70 plus the high priest.
Okay. That was the sound of the light bulb going on.
Ding! Was it a CFL? Go green?
Yeah. Only those genotoxic bulbs for me.
But it's a little bit disturbing because there are... there's this... with the wording within it makes it sound like it's a kumbaya. You know what? It's all there for... It's all the same God. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, of course, it is not the same God. Allah is not the same as Yahweh.
That's correct.
Sorry. Jesus, Yeshua, mm-hmm. is not the same as Esau.
That's right. Allah has no son.
That's what they teach.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to me that it's preparing the way for God's prophecy to be fulfilled.
And interestingly, Mike Heiser in his Islam and Armageddon writes about this, about... what he believes will be a future leader who will somehow show Jews and Muslims and Christians from Scripture that they should all be able to get along and cooperate and of course, follow you know, his lead, mm-hmm. this future leader, in one faith, because it's all good. It's all the same. And, you know, it's hard for us to conceive of that happening with all of the blood that's been shed in the Middle East in recent years. But, you know, Mike's a scholar, and he's actually read the words, and some of them in the original languages,
mm-hmm.
and believes that there's a case that can be made from the Quran to members, to Muslims, and from the Torah for Christians and Jews to show that, you know, this is the spot where God wants his temple.
It's creepy because one of the things that we see in Bible prophecy is that in the midst of the final week, the final 7 years
mm-hmm.
timeline before Christ's literal physical return to the earth, when he's going to reign for 1,000 years, that final 7 years, in the middle, 3.5 years into it, that is when the sacrifice is cut off.
Mm-hmm.
The world leader says, okay, to the Jewish people, you can no longer have the daily sacrifice. They're removed. So the assumption is that they've been doing it up until then.
Right.
You can't stop something you haven't started.
Right. And since it's not being done now, of course, that means that it's got to...
It will begin sometime. Right. And that's why last week we reported on the altar
mm-hmm.
being constructed. That's why we've encouraged you to go to the templeinstitute.org site.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we talk about things like this that lead to not what we've expected all along, that they're literally going to build a temple and it could take years before it's done, but that maybe it could start within the next few weeks.
It's, again, hard to imagine, but it is what we're told is coming, and it may be sooner than we think.
It's that radio show.
It is later.
Yes. We should start out with that. We'll have that at the beginning of the show.
Excellent.
Arch Obler.
Well, another left turn here as we welcome home the two journalists who were liberated, who were pardoned by Kim Jong-il. What a great guy. And
Did you see the secret negotiator?
Well, that's it. I mean, I saw the story at appearingindarkness.com from the New York Post about the help behind the scenes, Hollywood insider, Steve Bing, big Clinton supporter, Bill and Hillary. But of course, SharonKGilbert.com has the real exclusive story.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, the secret to the entire negotiation, the key to the entire negotiation.
Absolutely. There was a secret negotiator.
Somehow
on
the
that
media
plane.
Managed to miss these photos entirely, but not Sharon K. Gilbert.
No. I always catch these.
The secret negotiator present in North Korea to help free those.
Well, let's just give you a hint. He not only asked for, demanded, in fact, the release of the journalists, but he also demanded lots and lots of snacks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's he's tough to catch.
And a Vinky. That's what I heard.
Of course, it's Sam T. Doxson, who was at the big G4 summit, sitting on the lap of President Hu of China. If you haven't seen that photo, of course,
Well, he and Hu are big buddies from way back.
Well,
they were the
G20
together, the mm-hmm. G8 together, and now, you know, he's passed that along, that information to Kim Jong-il, and Kim Jong-il, begrudgingly, because you can see in the picture, he's not terribly comfortable.
No. President Kim of North Korea, dear leader, is not clearly not a dachshund guy. He's not a dog person.
No.
So, but Sam passed along the message and just said, remember, when it comes to leaders in Asia, who's on first? To which Kim Jong-il said, what? No,
what's on second? Yeah.
Why? Third base. So do see those pictures. We'll put links to those in the show notes as well, because it's
boom, chick.
Amazing what Sharon can do with Photoshop. No, they're totally legitimate.
They're legitimate. What do you mean, Photoshop? Speaking of photos of Sam, you need to go to my Facebook site because I have posted more Sam pictures there. And there's pictures of the really, really adorable Chenille Doxson that Deb and John
Shutt, yeah.
Yeah, sent to us. And we're naming her Daisy. There's a little name
on the
collar that says Sam, but I think it meant for Sam. That's what I'm assuming, because she just looks like a daisy. So Sam, you know, he's playing hard to get.
He's too cool for that.
He's too cool for that.
Yeah. So you'll see the pictures at Sharon's Facebook site. You'll find the links to our places on the web at PIDradio.com, along with all the show notes there.
Well, I want to talk about one more thing really quickly. There isn't a whole lot of time, but just take a look at the Washington Post, because there is an op-ed piece there from Tuesday that was written by Kathleen Sebelius, and she is going on and on. Now, I started a rant about this earlier and decided that, no, I'd just talk about it on tonight's show. She was going on and on. She said, "When my two sons graduated from college, I had mixed feelings. I was incredibly proud of their accomplishments, but I dreaded the fact that they would lose their health insurance when they left school." Bear in mind that she is the daughter of a governor of Ohio.
Uh-huh.
She is now retired. She's no longer a governor of Kansas. Her husband is a judge. These people didn't hurt for money in any way, shape, or form.
It never has.
And she says the peace of mind that comes with health reform means college graduations can go back to being the celebrations they used to be.
What, back in the days before we all had health insurance? Excuse me, when did the United States transform into this nation where having health insurance was a constitutional right?
I am baffled by it, but getting, you know, her sons, one of them, I think his name was John. I'd have to look it up again because I don't have it in front of me. She had Ned, and I think the other one was John. So forgive me if I've gotten his name wrong. But Ned has graduated from law school in mm-hmm. Georgetown, and he's got a sweet deal starting September with a nice firm.
Sure.
And he's marrying a Rockefeller.
Okay, so he's
going to be okay. I think he'll have some health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably had it for some time.
He's not going to take the public option.
I don't think he will.
Yeah.
And her other son, now I don't know what his source of health insurance premium money is, but there for a while back, I think it was January of last year, he was trying to sell a game called Don't Drop the Soap online about life in prison, where you took on the persona of one or more prisoners.
Uh-huh.
And I won't even tell you what one of the lines in there is. It's not worth repeating. But the address for contact was the governor's mansion.
The governor's mansion in the state of Kansas. So for her to come out and say that she was worried about her son's health insurance after college.
It was disingenuous at best.
At best.
But she goes on to say in this op-ed piece, again, it's at the Washington Post from Tuesday, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes. She says, let me see if I can find the exact quote in here, because she talks about needing to get this done now. Forgive me, yeah. I've got to read through this for a second here.
Well, and again, this whole concept that Americans must have insurance. Now, yes, I know that we've made decisions in the past based on health insurance, and health insurance is a consideration. But at what point in America's history did we go from pay-as-you-go to must-have insurance? Because it seems to me, and I could be way wrong here, but it seems to me that healthcare costs really started getting outrageous when we all started carrying medical insurance for our families.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we are almost a socialist system when it comes to healthcare now.
I agree with that. And I apologize. I'm not finding the line that, and I don't want to delay it any longer, but essentially she was saying, can't think of a name, and I did have supper before this, Arlen Specter, that essentially there's a need to rush and not look at the details.
Yeah. We need to vote, not
we need to make sure that the details are right, but we can't go get hung up on those details because speed is the issue.
Yeah. And besides, as Nancy Pelosi says, all these people showing up at these town hall meetings and demanding that our lawmakers actually read the bill are a bunch of Nazis carrying swastikas into the meeting. Well-dressed
called
Nazis.
Called brown shirts.
Yeah.
They're calling them brown shirts.
This is an insult. It really is an insult to the American people.
I'm insulted.
It's as though the only reason we're protesting or angry about this and about the bailouts is that we are somehow just, we're somehow Republican operatives. We're not smart enough, in other words, to figure out that this is bad.
Here's one of the things that really bothers me. No matter who's saying it, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, they're all saying, well, if these people would just show up and be civil and have a nice discourse, engage civilized debate. Mm-hmm. They would be heard. The day for that is ending because I got to tell you, people in this area are mad.
Yeah. As we mentioned yesterday, they jammed bailouts for the banks, the automakers, and AIG, the world's biggest insurance company, down our throats when almost two-thirds of us opposed it. And they're getting ready to do the same thing with healthcare.
Hey, one more thing before we leave today. I heard this on the local WIBC, which is a news station out, News Talk, out of Indianapolis. It's a local story. I don't think it applies to every one of the car dealers, but apparently some of them out there mm-hmm. have changed the paperwork so that if you do trade in your clunker for cash,
right.
You'll be signing a paper that says if the government does not reimburse that car dealer, you're on the hook for it.
Yeah.
So read the fine print.
So, if you're financing and they're going to make you sign that, because some dealers are concerned if the government doesn't pass the bill or runs out of money before mm-hmm. they can get their paperwork approved.
Well,
then,
exactly.
Then
and at that point, you will already have obtained your car loan.
Right.
So you would be, it would be out of your pocket.
Yeah. And one more thing. This is just coming in now this afternoon. Just learned that film director John Hughes, responsible for such films as 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, Planes, Trains, Breakfast Club, Uncle Buck, National Lampoon's Vacation, has died at the age of 59. He suffered a heart attack this morning in Manhattan and has passed away.
Well, I'm sorry for his passing. He always had a very... I wasn't very crazy, never was crazy about his depiction of parents.
No.
Parents, stupid.
Yes. In almost all of his films,
stupid.
But you can't deny that, those films.
He made an impact
were cultural,
on a generation.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily a good impact.
Very, very true. So anyway, John Hughes, dead at the age of 59. Email
we're
address.
36 minutes.
I know. Where
this
did this
15-minute show?
It's like the estimated cost of the bailouts.
This is the show that never ends.
Well, we will wrap it. Our email address for your comments and suggestions is radio@piercingthedarkness.com. Yeah, he's had enough.
You can also join us at the forum. It's Piercing the Darkness Forum. There's the link in the show notes. And I think you can find a link on our website, pidradio.com. You can join us on Facebook and Twitter.
And until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and there's Sam, and we're all saying bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. And living in the past, God can do a new thing now in a kingdom that will last. He'll make a way across your wilderness like a river flows in the desert land. There's a new day coming, a new day coming now.
and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.